Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to another week to the show where we don't take calls and we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And just before going on the air, I saw that Drudge has picked up the WorldNet Daily headline, a possible explosion deep in the bowels of the Fordo nuclear facility there in Iran. Still don't know if it's true. It's unconfirmed. But if it is true, we're happy. And well, that diminishes one of the more distant threats against civilized people and your children and mine. But we're going to cover some other threats that are much closer to home, as we always do, here on the Worldview. And I think I want to start an update on a story we ran last week. Last week, we talked about the hydrocarbons found in massive quantities in the Horsehead Nebula in the Orion constellation. And the theory proffered that hydrocarbons, oil in particular, are not the product of decaying biological material from millions and millions and millions and millions of years ago, but in fact occur by natural processes all over the universe. Well, this week from space.com, a new firm called Deep Space Industries, Inc., announced on January 22nd that it plans to launch a fleet of prospecting spacecraft in 2015, then beginning harvesting metals and water from near-Earth asteroids within a decade or so. Space.com reports that such work could make it possible to build and refuel spacecraft far above our planet's surface. Thus, says Space.com, helping our species get a foothold in the final frontier. Couple of things. First, the bumper sticker, Earth first, we'll mine the other planets later. These guys took it seriously. Deep Space Industries, Inc. But one thing that I don't like is when the human race is called a species. Now, I know technically and biologically and anthropologically speaking, perhaps we can be called a species, but I don't like it when scientists and other technocrats call the human race a species, because I think it puts us on the same level with ants and bugs and bears and dogs and wolverines. And I don't like that. I think we're different. I think we're higher. I think we're created in the image and likeness of the living God, the Creator. And I don't think that the human race should be referred to as a species. So that's the one thing. That's the first thing. That's the annoying thing. I get that out of the way. Now let's go to the encouraging thing. For all of you people who were bemoaning the fact that Barry Ho and his administration have defunded a lot of NASA projects and that America somehow is no longer going to be a leader in space exploration, I'm encouraged to see that the private sector, well, they'll probably get us further out into space in the next 50 years than NASA did in the first, how many years has NASA been at it? 60, 70 years? I imagine in the next 50 years, we will achieve 10 orders of magnitude more space exploration should the private sector be allowed to take over that particular industry. Now, the CEO of Deep Space Industries, Inc., his name is David Gump. Gump, like Forrest Gump. It's like Forrest Gump's cousin is about to go out and start mining asteroids. I think that's poetic. Anyway, David Gump, he says more than 900 new asteroids that pass near Earth are discovered every year, and they can be like the Iron Range of Minnesota was for the Detroit car industry in the last century, a key resource located near where it is needed. In this case, metals and fuel from asteroids can expand the in-space industries of this century, and he says that's his company's strategy. Deep Space Industries, Inc., by the way, is the second company to jump into the asteroid mining business. The first is a company called Planetary Resources, and it unveiled its strategy last April. So we'll begin mining the other planets, and we'll go on to find out, I do believe, that hydrocarbons exist all over space. And we don't have to worry about running out of oil, and we can burn it with profligacy, should we choose to do so. And that's always encouraging to know that we can keep that up. All right. Another update. Not from last week, but from the last 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 weeks. This is from the Washington Post. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton has failed to fake her own death and did indeed testify before Congress last week in regards to the September attacks in Benghazi, Libya, that killed 4 Americans. Now, I read this entire Washington Post article, and I note that the Washington Post fails to report her most shocking statement. Yes, her what difference does it make statement, right? The one we're all familiar with. Well, it's nowhere is it quoted in this article. And I went online before airtime to try to find the exact quote. I had to go to the second page of Google to find it in its complete form, which I find strikingly odd, since it was the most prominent statement from the entire testimony. And another note, Stephen Colbert, comedian, God-hater, he actually edited her testimony, that particular statement, so that she didn't look as stupid as she looked in real life. Yeah. Let's see. Now, I did find the quote, and let me get to that in a moment. Because one of the things that the Washington Post did report, they say that Clinton said this, quote, "We have to recognize this is a global movement. U.S. forces can kill al-Qaeda leaders, but until democracy grows in the region, we're going to be faced with this level of instability," unquote. That was Hillary speaking in her 2 to 3 word bursts, as she's wont to do. Except in that one statement, which we'll get to. But I want to digress back to this. She says that until democracy grows in the Arab-Muslim region, this is the kind of the level of instability we can expect. And just a note to Hillary and all of you other people who worship democracy. Democracy is not going to bring stability to the Muslim-Arab region when the masses are a bunch of bloodthirsty, backwards pagans. Give them democracy, they'll destroy the world, you idiots. Hillary and the rest of you. Bunch of democracy worshipers. Anything else interesting from the Washington Post story? Anything else that they accidentally reported that's actually important? Oh, yes. Hillary did say, she says, there's no doubt that Algerian terrorists in the recent, this is regarding the recent gas plant massacre in Algeria. She says there's no doubt that the Algerian terrorists had weapons from Libya. She says there's no doubt. The only thing that is in doubt, at least in my mind, is did Barry Ho and his administration and the State Department and even the ambassador there on the ground in Libya, did he give those guns to those Al-Qaeda terrorists who attacked the gas plant in Algeria? That's the open question, Hill. And she's going to get out of town fast before everything comes down on her. I think she's resigning. Has she already resigned? I don't know if she's already resigned yet or she's announced her resignation. She's already introduced John Kerry. We'll get to that. Well, maybe we'll just say it right now before we get to Hillary's comment. This is from Breitbart. By the way, I want to thank Breitbart. They were the only place I could find the entire "What Difference Does It Make Hillary" quote. Kudos to Breitbart. But Breitbart also reports that Senator John Kerry said in his opening statement in his confirmation hearing for Secretary of State, speaking before the Senate, that he will do his best to, quote, "implement President Obama's vision for the world." What more could be expected, or less could be expected, from John Kerry, John Kerr, no man has stumbled into more riches and prominence simply by parroting the party line and just, I don't know, not throwing up on himself or soiling himself in public. That's his claim to fame. I don't understand how John Kerry could have achieved the level of prominence that he has achieved. It's inexplicable. But there he is, and here we are, and we're going to get him. That's just great. All right, now, on to Hillary. Here's what Hillary said, and I found out at church this morning that I'm not the only person who caught this. The exact quote from Hillary, she said in answer to a question about why it appears that the administration misled the American people about the protest and the video and why the attack occurred. Hillary said, quote, "With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided to kill some Americans? What difference does it make? What difference at this point does it make? It's our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again."
You're unbelievable.
All right.
You're so unbelievable.
Hillary, we're not buying it. I'm sorry. We are not. My extremely attractive audio engineer, not buying that. So did you recognize she basically contradicted herself in the statement. She said, what difference does it make at this point? It's our job to figure out what happened. Hillary, that is the difference that it makes. If we want to figure out what happened, therein lies the difference that we must uncover. If we're going to ever know what happens, we need to know why it happened. And we need to know who did it. And we need to rain down hell, death, and destruction upon them as soon as possible, which has not happened, Hillary. Anyway, a virtual media blackout on the fact that Hillary uttered a statement at that point during the hearing, at least one senator should have said, "Wait a minute, stop. What did you just say, Ms. Clinton?" He should have asked the stenographer, "Could you read that back, please?" And they should have asked her to clarify that. And about 1,000,006 other things, by the way, in that testimony. The Republicans practically laid down and let her walk all over them. It was embarrassing. Of course, the Republican Party is utterly defeated and over. After 2014, I predict that the Republican Party will no longer exist in a form that can ever wield any amount of power ever again. They're pretty much done. Barry and Hill and the rest of them have destroyed the Republican Party. Well, actually, they just gave the Republicans the rope. They handed the rope to Boehner and the other misfits, the other liberals. What's his name? The Mormon guy who ran for president and lost. What was his name? Romney. Mitt Romney, that's it. Mitt Romney and all the other compromised liberal Republicans. They've destroyed the party, and as well it should be. It's about time for a new party, I think, a conservative party. Because now we're at the point, with the Republicans being so weak and neutered as they are, that the Democrats can practically say anything. And I shouldn't even put it that way. With the Republicans as weak and destroyed, they're just a quivering mass of jelly before liberals. And liberals can say whatever they want, whether they're Democrat or Republican. And we have one particular liberal, Vice President Joe Biden. Listen to what he said. This is from Lancaster Online, Lancaster, Pennsylvania newspaper. They report that speaking last week to the U.S. Conference of Mayors in Washington, D.C. about gun violence, Vice President Joe Biden made the surprising revelation that he was playing golf within a quarter of a mile of the schoolhouse when a troubled truck driver shot 10 Amish girls, killing 5 and wounding 5. Do we all remember that story? Well, barely. I mean, there's been so many mass slaughters, it's hard to place one particular one in anyone's mind. But this is the one where the crazy maniac shot 10 Amish schoolgirls at a little Amish schoolhouse in Pennsylvania. Well, Biden claims he was golfing close by, and he actually heard the gunshots. That's what he says. Now, an online search, according to this Pennsylvania newspaper, an online search of the area shows that Moccasin Run would have been the most logical golf course for Biden to have been on if he indeed heard the gunshots that day at the Amish school. Well, Lancaster Online reports that if Biden was in the area, he wasn't at Moccasin Run Golf Course. The owner of the golf club says there is no record of Joe Biden, then a U.S. senator. There's no record that he visited the golf course that day.
You're unbelievable.
Oh, no mercy. We call them like we see them here at the Weekly World View. See, we won't let them get away with that. Where was I now? Let's see. Despite the fact that Biden's claim is frankly just unbelievable, Kendra Barkoff, his press secretary, stands by Biden's comments. She said the vice president was golfing in the area the day of the shooting, but she failed to provide answers to any other questions, including the name of the golf course. She probably just can't remember exactly where he was playing. Besides, how dare you question the integrity of the vice president of the United States on an issue so sensitive as gun violence in America? We all know that Joe Biden is the savior of America's children. How dare you even question him, you vicious, mean conservatives? How dare you? Anyway, so that's Joe. And so this story, you won't hear anything more about this story. This is over. This is it. The liberals can say whatever they want. The conservative movement has been effectively neutered and destroyed. I shouldn't say the conservative movement, because I'm part of the conservative movement, but I'm getting awfully tired of moving. We've been moving for an awful long time. I mean, a movement needs to come to some conclusion at some point, shouldn't it? It should result in the destruction of the liberal movement that's hell-bent on destroying Western civilization and corrupting your children and mine. So, I say while the Republican Party may be destroyed, we conservatives need to keep moving. Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney, covering threats near and far for your consideration, edification, and perhaps even entertainment somewhere along the way. Nothing entertaining about North Korea. I've got a story here from Reuters. North Korea, this past week, threatened to attack rival South Korea if Seoul joined a new round of tightened unsanctions, as Washington, D.C. unveiled more of its own economic restrictions following Pyongyang's rocket launch last month. Do we recall the rocket launch last month? Well, barely. We're focused right now on who lip-synced what and what kind of Fresnel lenses that were in Hillary's goggles at the hearings. And the Super Bowl, I guess. I mean, there's just so many distractions going on. It's hard to recall that North Korea, just a month or so ago, launched a credible intercontinental ballistic missile that could possibly strike San Francisco. But, you know, I think Beyonce was lip-syncing. That's what we need to focus on. That and dog stories on the news, yes. But they did do it. And they vowed to conduct more rocket and nuclear tests, according to Reuters, after the Unsecurity Council censured North Korea for its December long-range missile launch. The Unsecretary, I keep saying Unsecretary, the Unsecurity Council unanimously condemned North Korea for their December rocket launch just this past Tuesday and have allegedly expanded alleged existing unsanctions against North Korea. This past week, the United States also slapped economic sanctions on two North Korean bank officials and a Hong Kong trading company that the U.S. accuses of supporting Pyongyang's proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. All well and good. I'm all for sanctions, I suppose, as much good as they can do. I wonder, though, if economic sanctions are merely applying pressure to this fat, crazy kid who's been given a country with nuclear weapons, and they're just going to pressure him into doing something stupid. I mean, is it like making the kid sit in the corner? Is it like taking away his allowance? I mean, is it like banning him from his skateboard, and then he's going to nuke Honolulu? I just don't know. So, I don't know. If any of you have any ideas on sanctions and whether or not they're appropriate or effective, I'd like to know. I personally think that a preemptive strike on North Korea's nuclear facilities and a number of their major military facilities would be far more effective at reining in the fat kid with a country and nuclear weapons than, taking away his skateboard and his Hong Kong trading company. But that's just me. I could be wrong on that. I don't claim to be right on everything, but I do have an opinion on everything. Now, U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, I have to spit every time I say that. Here's what Leon Panetta says. This guy can't be gone fast enough. Is he still? Didn't they just shuffle him? He just became the Secretary of Defense, or he's moving to the CIA? I can't remember. Wasn't this guy like Bill Clinton's personal attendant or something back during the Clinton administration? Whenever Clinton needed socks or a dress cleaned or something, he sent Panetta out, and now Panetta is operating at the highest levels of the military and intelligence community. How does this happen? It's astonishing to me. It's as if I'm living in an alternate dimension. It's bizarre. Anyway, Leon Panetta, shockingly enough, is the Secretary of Defense. And here's what he says about the North Korea situation. They're threatening war, as they've been doing for the better part of 60 years. Panetta says, "We are fully prepared to deal with any kind of provocation from the North Koreans. But I hope in the end that they determine that it's better to make a choice to become part of the international family." I'm just wondering, when has that ever happened before? When you have a madman dictator who wields unlimited power within his cloistered nation there of slaves, when has a person like that ever made a choice to become part of the international family without having been bombed first? Without having the fear of God bombed into him first? Has it ever happened? Well, Leon wouldn't know, so I'm not going to ask Leon. I'll ask you people, because I know you people know a lot of things. If anyone knows of any time that has ever happened in the past, please let me know. And then perhaps we could give some credence to the opinion of sock fetcher and dress washer Leon Panetta. There was one dress he missed, obviously. We remember all that. Okay, let's move on now. Into the personhood file. Now, this could be confused as a gun control story, but indeed, to me, this is a personhood story. This is from CNS News. A growing number of the nation's sheriffs are standing up to gun control measures proposed by both the Ho administration and Senator Dianne Feinstein, evil daughter of Satan, senator from California. You've all heard it this whole past week, this past 10 days or so. Feinstein and Ho and Biden on the warpath to grab your guns and to infringe upon your Second Amendment rights. Well, a number of sheriffs around the country are simply not going to take it anymore. These are tough guys. According to CNS News, many law enforcement officials have written letters to the president and Joe Biden voicing their concerns over what they believe is an effort to infringe upon constitutional rights. So, in New Mexico, 30 of the state's 33 county sheriffs have made statements to lawmakers that they're under oath to support the U.S. Constitution. That's right. 28 of the 29 sheriffs in Utah have sent a letter to Barry Ho stating that they will not enforce laws they believe to be unconstitutional. In California, we've got Sheriff Adam Christensen, Stanislaus County. In Missouri, Lawrence County Sheriff Brad DeLay. Jackson County, Kentucky Sheriff Denny Payman. Sheriff Larry Smith of Smith County, Texas. And Martin County Sheriff in Florida, Sheriff Bill Snyder. And CNS News apparently has a whole list of all these sheriffs who have boldly stood up in defense of the Second Amendment. And while I credit these sheriffs for having the courage to stand up and tell the federal government that they are not going to enforce laws that are blatantly on their face unconstitutional, I would like to ask these 100 or 150 and growing, how many? I'd like to ask all these sheriffs, what about the 5th and the 14th Amendment that guarantee equal protection under the law and the right to life? Have you thought about those unconstitutional rulings? And have you thought about perhaps having the courage to stand up for the one right without which the Second Amendment is meaningless? And that's the right of you and I and every person, every human being, that right to life. Why is it that these sheriffs are suddenly emboldened when it comes to the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms? But when the government stepped in and began butchering innocent people within their jurisdictions and continue to do it to this day and will do it tomorrow and the day after and the day after, why do these sheriffs do nothing? You know, I think this is a great project for a homeschool high school kid. And I know there's a number of them out there in this audience. This would be a great project. Locate each one of these sheriffs, get their contact information, find out if there's an abortion clinic or a Planned Parenthood that refers people to abortions, find out if there's any of those operating within the jurisdictions of these various brave sheriffs, and send all these suddenly emboldened sheriffs a letter. Or better yet, find another homeschool kid in their jurisdiction to send a letter to these brave sheriffs, requesting that while we applaud and respect their bravery and patriotism in standing up for the Second Amendment, would they be motivated to do the same thing regarding the 5th and the 14th Amendments? Because I'm convinced, ladies and gentlemen, that somewhere out there in America there is a sheriff who will step up. And on the day that happens, we could have the event that facilitates a social crisis, that facilitates a moral change back to sanity, where our government does not condone, promote, and pay for the murder of innocent people. So for all you homeschool parents out there, if you've got a kid in high school, this would be a great project. Extra credit. Or, I don't know, if you give some sort of accreditation at your unified school district there at your personal compound, perhaps you could get your kid on this. Feel free to send me an email. I'll send you a link to a list of all these sheriffs. I'd do it myself, but I'm working for a living. We're sinks, you know, here at the McBurney compound. Single income, numerous kids. And I think Nicole's a little too young for this particular project. I think we need some high school kids Anyway, I can outline the whole program. Please feel free to contact me. Let's try to find the sheriff who will go slap a padlock on the child-killing facilities that are obviously flagrantly in violation of the Constitution, among other things. All right. It's really weird about Republicans. When it comes to their money or their guns, I mean, they're practically willing to start a revolution or a civil war. But we've laid down for 40 years and allowed the government to kill people. It's what?
It's all due to the sexual immorality.
It's due to sexual immorality, yeah. I think a lot of Republican leadership, they want to fundraise on morality and they want to tout family values, but they still want to have a chick on the side. I think that's the major problem within the Republican Party and perhaps even within the conservative movement. And it's tainted our ability to recognize things for what they are. But I'm convinced that somewhere out there, there's a sheriff who's morally straight and clean who would do it if he was simply reminded of his gross hypocrisy in standing up for the Second Amendment while leaving the Fifth and Fourteenth to be violated every day. All right, I've spoken enough on that. Let's get on to something else. More from the Personhood File. This is just a fun story. This is from the Washington Post. Was forced to report this week that Rivas Grogan, he's an anti-abortion activist, eluded capture during the presidential inauguration for 5 hours. He was in a tree at Barry Ho's presidential coronation. And the Capitol Police say that he annoyed onlookers who were beneath him in the tree by shouting loudly. Mr. Rivas Grogan is extremely agitated by the fact that the U.S. government and our citizens and our neighbors on a daily basis support, advocate, pay for the murder of innocent people. And he's so incensed that he was literally driven up a tree by it. Now, he had just been arrested and charged with disorderly conduct the previous week after police said he shouted from the gallery of the U.S. Senate. He's been convicted 5 times in the District of Columbia since 2009, mostly on charges of disorderly conduct and disobeying police. He's typically been ordered to pay a fine and given probation and suspended sentences, and he spent a little bit of time in jail. Police say that Grogan once dropped to the ground in the Capitol Rotunda a la Spider-Man while clutching a doll, screaming, "Stop killing the babies." this guy is my hero. How awesome is that? Now, police spotted Grogan in a tree at the presidential coronation there in Washington, and they tried to talk him down, and he wasn't coming down. So they called the fire department. So the fire department was going to roll a ladder up to Mr. Grogan's tree, but they couldn't make it through the security barricades. And Grogan just kept climbing higher and higher in the tree. Police brought their own ladder, but Grogan climbed higher than the D.C. police were willing to climb. Not one of these police had the stones to get in the tree himself. So Grogan just climbed higher and higher and shouted louder and louder about the fact that the man who's about to be inaugurated is presiding over a government that murders innocent people, which really isn't funny at all. But Mr. Grogan has done a wonderful job of pointing out the spectacular lunacy that we're all engaged in here in America. Let's see now. Officials decided, finally, huffing and puffing and sweating, they finally decided to leave Grogan in the tree until after Obama was coronated because they wanted to avoid any disruptions. Several hours later, after the inauguration was over, Grogan came down of his own accord. Now, his mother... do they say how old Mr. Grogan is? I guess it doesn't matter. Grogan's mother is a 69-year-old woman. Her name is Penny Grogan. She's from Mansfield, Texas. No doubt the man's a Texan, right? And his mama's a Texan. She calls her son, quote, a wonderful Christian man who has a wife and three children and runs a ministry. Obviously, he was ministering that day. Now, that's what I call a ministry, out climbing the baby killers in a tree and making them look stupid and foolish. All right. Well, now, Penny says, here's what Penny Grogan, mama from Texas, says about America and her son and the whole situation. She says, quote, God will judge all of this one day, not the courts. Praise the Lord. Grogan was one of three people arrested by Capitol Police at the coronation of Barry Ho. Now, they had to wait to arrest him, obviously, because they couldn't catch him. But, you know, when he came down, they finally did arrest him. The other two people, one was arrested on an outstanding warrant, and the other was arrested for drinking in public. So all three of these guys end up in the lockup at the end of the coronation there in D.C. And can you imagine the conversations that went on between the drunk guy and the guy who was on the lam and the guy who's just trying to stop the murder of innocent people in America? And what an interesting juxtaposition that the D.C. police had to experience in processing these three dangerous criminals through the justice system in the same way. It kind of points out the hypocrisy and the stupidity of it all. And if it doesn't stop, Mama Grogan from Texas is right. God will judge all this one day. Despite the death of the Republican Party, the conservative movement is still alive. And we're coming for you, all of you. All of you who mock God. All of you who deny our heritage. All of you who threaten our children. You better look out, because we're coming for you. All right, now let's continue. Put those guitars away, boys. Wait a minute, go. Well, I like that part. Well, that's a much better place to come in right there. I got to get my segues down. Thank you very much. All right. Now, speaking of people who are a direct threat to your children and mine, well, not mine, because I'll never turn my kids over to these bastards. Let's go to Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. This is from the Associated Press. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration will not take any regulatory action over a vending machine at a Pennsylvania college. What do you think the vending machine dispenses, my dear? The morning after abortion pill in a vending machine. Now, you can't have a vending machine that distributes beer or wine. And I think cigarette machines were banished from college campuses a generation ago. But here, we have an incredibly dangerous cocktail of drugs and hormones available to anyone at a vending machine on a college campus in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. FDA spokes dyke Erica Jefferson. I don't know if she's a dyke. I just assume anyone associated with this administration is a deviant pervert from hell. That's just my default position. They're presumed guilty here at the Weekly Worldview. She's actually the FDA spokeswoman. to be correct. Her name is Eric Jefferson, and she says that the FDA has looked at publicly available information about the vending program at Shippensburg University, and officials have decided no action is necessary. So this is the first time in the history of the FDA that anyone within the FDA has determined that no action on the part of the FDA was necessary. It's never happened before. It's a watershed event. Administrators at the college said that the idea for dispensing the abortifacient pill via a vending machine, the idea came from a student survey and was endorsed by the student government. I know, the student council. Anyway, let me tell you, folks, the idea for dispensing the abortion pill did not come from a student survey or the student government. It came from the professors at the university who are actively seducing the daughters of ignorant parents who have turned their children over to this godless institution. That's where it came from. It came from the faculty. And then, of course, yeah, all the boys who want to deflower and use all the girls, it came from there. So I guess in one sense, it did come from the student government. Just shocking and unbelievable. It is my prediction, by the way, that someone outside of the FDA in the not-too-distant future will determine that some action is necessary against this particular vending machine. Not that I would advocate anyone doing anything outside of the bounds of legality, but in my opinion, some regulatory action is warranted. And I predict that action will be taken sometime soon. All right. This is a story from the Culture file. It's in the subfile, They're Not All Heroes. The They Are Not All Heroes file. This is from Reuters. Just over 10% of women in the military in 2008 said that they'd had an unintended pregnancy in the prior year. That figure is increasing and is significantly higher than rates in the general public. The findings come amid news that the Pentagon will soon lift the ban on women in frontline combat jobs starting in 2016. Reuters reports that abortion is legally restricted on military bases. That's what they say at Reuters, and that's the common position that people in the government say. They say, well, abortion's not available on military bases. Perhaps that's why we have so many unintended pregnancies. If only we had abortion to solve the problem. Well, Dr. Daniel Grossman from the University of California, San Francisco, who worked on the study, called the rates of unintended pregnancy really shocking. And if you can shock someone from the University of California at San Francisco, well, that's pretty darn shocking, let me tell you. He says, quote, women in the military certainly deserve more than that. I mean, it's as if they're catching the flu and we're not providing them with proper... I mean, they're getting knocked up, okay? A bunch of sluts in the military getting knocked up is what's happening. They deserve better than that. Anyway, he says that this problem needs to be addressed across all branches of the military, and they've got pills and condoms, and they've got all kinds of ideas on how to help women. Let's see here. I've got a quote from some other bureaucrat. Oh, no, this is the same guy, Daniel Grossman, UCSF. Clearly, unintended pregnancy is an important public health problem for everyone. It seems particularly important for the military population because, obviously, it can disrupt a woman's career, unquote. Well, Mr. Grossman is not the hero you look for. And neither is that knocked-up E4 that can't make it to formation because she's got to go down to the OB-GYN clinic. I mean, she's not exactly a hero. I would agree. So he says it's particularly important because obviously it can disrupt a woman's career. Professor Grossman, it could also disrupt a military unit's warfighting capabilities. Don't you think? Maybe? Possibly? You know, the fact that the machine gunner got knocked up and can't make it to formation can't make it to her duty station when the sirens go off. But that's not the concern of people like Professor Grossman and even Leon Panetta on down in the brass there at the military. What they're concerned about is women's careers. We don't want the careers to be interrupted, but we don't want them to be punished with a baby, as their fearless leader once said. Anyway, not too much concern for the war-fighting capabilities of our military units, since that's really obviously not what they're about anymore. They're something entirely different. By the way, on this common myth that abortion is not available on a military base, is not true. And Reuters even reports, earlier this month, laws were amended to allow victims of rape or incest to get abortions at military bases. But otherwise, in the past, except when the mother's life is in danger, abortion on military bases is illegal, allegedly. Okay, so that puts the lie to this idea that abortion is not allowed on military bases. That's a myth. That's a myth. One of the big lies, right along the other big lie, that the Republican Party prevented yours and my tax money from funding abortions. That's right along the big lie that the government can give $500 million to Planned Parenthood, but nobody's paying for any abortions. You and I are not paying for any abortions. Don't look at the man behind the curtain, ladies and gentlemen. Keep moving along. There's nothing to see here. So let's go now across the pond to a story from the Telegraph in London. David Attenborough, who is a television personality. I seem to remember him from animal shows, mountain lions and, Africa, zebras. Remember, right? David Attenborough, we're familiar. He does all the wildlife. Anyway, he has said that humans are threatening their own existence and that of other species. See, that's why I don't like that. Other species. He says that humans are threatening their own existence and that of other species by using up the world's resources. He says the only way to save the planet from famine and species extinction is to limit human population growth. Yeah. Here's his exact quote. Quote, "We are a plague upon the earth." That's the humans, by the way. That's you and me. That's David Attenborough. And that's your kids and my kids. We are a plague upon the earth. And it's not just climate change. It's sheer space. Places to grow food for this enormous horde of people. Either we limit our population growth or the natural world will do it for us. We are a plague, says David Attenborough. You know, that reminds me, ladies and gentlemen, I've been reading a book. Try to find the title here because I don't want to get this wrong. It's called Hitler and the Nazi Darwinian Worldview. And the author, whose name I should be able to state here, as I should have it in my notes. The author is Jerry Bergman. Hitler and the Nazi Darwinian Worldview. A fantastic book that I want to recommend. He's going to be interviewed on Bob Enyart Live here in Denver on the radio in the next week or two. I encourage everyone to listen to Bob Enyart every day so that you can catch the interview with Jerry Bergman on the book Hitler and the Nazi Darwinian Worldview. And underlying what Mr. Attenborough has just stated here is a very similar worldview that underlied the Holocaust and World War II and the Nazis. Because the Nazis believed in social Darwinism, that they were aiding natural selection by killing off the weaker races and raising up their race of supermen. And Mr. Attenborough's statement is eerily reminiscent of things that were written and stated by the Nazis as they brought hell to Earth. Mr. Attenborough, though, the only thing he leaves out is the master race or the super race. He basically just wants the human race to commit suicide. And so here's my question. If social Darwinism in the 1920s and 30s was capable of producing the Nazi Party and everything that happened as a result of that, where are we now in the 21st century that the entire population of the earth and almost all of the churches who've attained any education at all are convinced that Darwinian evolution is true and that humans are just a species like any other species? And now combine that with the near global acceptance of homosexuality as a legitimate alternative lifestyle, what type of hell and destruction are we now capable of bringing upon our fellow man now that we've combined social Darwinism and acceptance of deviant promiscuity and homosexuality? Something worth lamenting. That's a lamenting ballad. Chris Cornell should be very happy with the Weekly Worldview, by the way. That song has not been played twice in 2 weeks anywhere in the world since its relatively obscure release in, I think, 1999. So Chris should probably pay us something for playing that twice in 2 weeks. Anyway, I know I think he's just a full-on heathen God hater. He's a good singer, and he should thank us for playing one of the most obscure solo albums in the history of solo albums twice in a week. All right. Now, speaking of the end of the world, let's go to Japan because we're going to talk about a similar attitude. David Attenborough leads us into Japan's new government. Let's see, their finance minister, Taro Aso, said last week that the elderly should be allowed to, quote, hurry up and die, unquote.
He's elderly, too.
I was going to ask you how old this guy might be.
I'm not sure.
He's definitely over 60. Anyway, he's one of the richest men in Japan. He's the finance minister. He says old people should hurry up and die to relieve pressure on the state to pay for their medical care. Now, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. When the U.S. Congress and Nancy Pelosi and all her demons from hell snuck through Obamacare in the middle of the night on a procedural vote in the House, the reason I said that this changes everything and this is the end of the country is because now the government has the authority, or at least they think they do, to make decisions based on the fact that now the state has to pay for everybody's health care, which is going to give them the right to kill more people. And now it's going to grow exponentially, and it's going to grow faster and faster, and the government is not only going to advocate and pay for the butchering of innocent children in the womb, they're going to start killing old people, then inconvenient people, then sick people, and then before you know it, it's going to be people that disagree with them. Before you know it, it's going to be people who say that heterosexuality is normal and homosexuality is criminal. The us. They're going to come and kill us, okay? And the only way you're going to avoid being in the crosshairs of the government is to knuckle under and toe their line. You know, the Bible says that talks about the end of the world, that people won't be able to buy or sell unless they get the mark of the beast. I don't think the mark of the beast is a tattoo on your forehead, ladies and gentlemen. I think it's an attitude. And I think it's an attitude that you're going to be forced to buy into. Not that I'm equating Barry Ho and his minions and demons from hell with the end of the world, although everything is a shadow of everything in Revelation, so there are similarities. But it's not going to be long. I think it's going to be in my lifetime when to say that homosexuality is a criminal behavior will get you the death penalty. And not just that, being sick or infirmed, being old, being overweight, being a fat smoker, you're going to get the death penalty, ladies and gentlemen. Because now, like Japan, the government has to pay for everybody's health care, and that gives them the right to decide when you live and when you die. I feel like I'm pointing out the obvious, but perhaps there's new people in the audience who don't realize that we've all been sold down the river. And without a major cataclysmic social event, we're all going to be herded into the death camps within a generation. And I believe that to be true. In Japan, by the way, according to this article from The Guardian, almost a quarter of the population is over 60 years old. And that is forecast to rise 40% over the next 50 years. So what does Taro Aso have to say? Heaven forbid if you're forced to live on when you want to die. I would wake up feeling increasingly bad, knowing that the treatment was all being paid for by the government. The problem won't be solved unless you let the old people hurry up and die. Ironically, he is the finance minister for the brand new prime minister, Shinzo Abe. Wasn't he drummed out of office like 10 years ago? I thought he was already. He's back. Anyway, Shinzo Abe is 72 years old. So I wonder how he feels about Mr. Aso's. He said, now, Shinzo Abe, 72-year-old prime minister, he says he would refuse end-of-life care. He says he wouldn't need it. He adds that he's already written a note instructing his family to deny him life-prolonging medical treatment. So, I mean, I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. Perhaps you and I, as normal people, we can sit around and wait for these liberal maniacs to kill themselves. But, I mean, this guy's already 72 years old. These liberals might outlast us. So I don't think we can sit around and just wait for them to kill themselves and not have kids and we end up winning. I think the time for action is rapidly approaching. In fact, it's already passed. And if you're not taking action, you should be. More than just listening to talk radio. Listening to talk radio does not equal doing something to stop the death of our civilization. You can listen to it, but then you got to go out and you can act on it. It's just like reading the Bible doesn't equate to knowing God. You have to act upon what you read. All right? Going to church does not equate to being a Christian. You have to actually do something. I hope you would feel compelled to do something as you see society gone mad around you, as I do. Let's see here now. This old heathen over in Japan, Taro Aso, he later attempted to clarify his comments. He acknowledged his language had been inappropriate in a public forum. I shouldn't have said that about the old people in public. Yeah, this is something that we usually reserve for committee meetings. Ironically, back in 2001, this same Taro Aso said he wanted Japan to become the kind of successful country in which, quote, even the richest Jews would want to live. Unquote. Yeah. Well, I don't think you're going to attract a lot of Jews with your Hitlerian Nazi-esque view of killing old people, Mr. Aso. Get out of here with that. All right, from the Culture File, this is from Fox News. Parents in suburban Nashville are furious at their elementary school. They're furious. Yes. Why? Because the school has announced plans to limit the number of times parents can visit their children during the school day. Yeah, it's like a prison. One of the parents told Fox News, "I feel like it's in violation of my rights as a parent. Everyone is frustrated and we're very angry." Listen, lady, what rights as a parent? You voluntarily surrendered your rights as a parent the day you packed your kids off to the godless government institution to be indoctrinated by the heathens who are destroying the country. And now you complain about it. These people are idiots. If you're sending your kids to the public school, I'll say it again, you're sinning against your child, you're sinning against God, and in my opinion, you're a moron. Under the new policy, a parent at the school would only be allowed to eat lunch with their children twice during any 9-week period. That sounds like something that Hermann Göring wrote himself. I mean, kindergarten will 9 weeks of on visit per parent. The principal came up with a voucher system. As a result of the massacre in Newtown, he's trying to control the number of adults that come into his school, allegedly. Anyway, under the new rules, parents would have to register online and obtain a ticket to visit their child at lunchtime. One parent said she believes the school is usurping her role as a mother. Please refer back to what I said last time, you moron. You surrendered your rights as a mother when you abandoned your responsibility to educate your child and not hand them over to a government institution for godless indoctrination. All right, now, we're almost out of time. Ooh, we're a little over here. All right, this probably has to be the last story of the day. I'll save the rest of this stuff. Mark Driscoll is a pastor. Mark Driscoll, he's the founding pastor of Mars Hill Church in Seattle, Washington. And he wrote on his blog post during the inauguration, he said, quote, "I'm praying for our president who today will place his hands on a Bible he does not believe to take an oath to a God he likely does not know." Well, I mean, that's fairly accurate, right? Talk about stating the obvious. He's stating something that's so grossly obvious that I kind of wonder if he's even qualified to be a pastor, if he feels like he has to say that. If my pastor said that he thinks Barack Obama likely does not know God, I would start questioning the sanity of my pastor. It's obvious that Barack Obama is four square, hell-bent, dead set against God and everything good and right and clean and just. And anyway, apparently there were a number of these pastors that that blogged during the inauguration. John Piper, a Christian minister, he tweeted that President Obama is spiritually blind or an evil hypocrite in claiming MLK and disregarding the weakest in regards to child killing. Russell Moore, dean of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, shared that he would be praying for President Obama. He says, he tweeted this, "Congratulations, President Barack Obama. Prayers for blessing, wisdom, direction, and health." Yeah, I think we're way past praying for any of that. For this particular president, we need to be praying that his office be taken from him and given to another. In his inaugural address, President Obama did not mention the fact that his government has continued to preside over the legal killing of innocent people, but he did mention the gay rights riots at Stonewall in his inaugural address, just in case you were wondering if perhaps Barack Obama may not know God. Just if you were wondering. So, my dear, the other stories I have are all about homosexuals, so I'm not going to do them, okay? I'm not, as a gift to my extremely attractive audio engineer. We're going to set the homos aside for the day, and we'll revisit that issue on another broadcast in the not-too-distant future. But let's finish here. A Catholic hospital in Colorado is being sued in the death of Lori Stodchill, a 31-year-old woman who died from a blood clot. She was pregnant with twins, and the twins could not be saved. Now, this was at a Catholic hospital. Her husband is sued the St. Thomas More Hospital because the on-call obstetrician didn't answer a page. Lawyers argue that the man's wife and the unborn children might have been saved had the doctor responded to a page. Well, the hospital's legal argument, the Catholic hospital's legal argument, is that the Stodchill's unborn children were not people. That's what the lawyers for the Catholic hospital are saying, that these were not people. And, of course, that contradicts alleged Catholic beliefs. I mean, if you say you believe something, all of you priests and cardinals and popes, if you say you believe it, you better do something about it, or I don't believe you believe it. That's why I say it's an alleged belief. You say you believe they're people, well, do something about it. Like the people I know who say they believe it, they do something about it. Anyway, I'm not going to get into the Catholic hospital's response or any other response to this issue, because the Right to Life movement in Colorado is going to issue a response to this situation this coming week, and you'll all become aware of it. Tune in to Bob Enyart Live this week on the radio. You'll hear all about it. We are going to respond to this idea that these Catholic lawyers have put forth, that an unborn child is not a person, and that the criminal laws against murder and negligent homicide, these laws should be applied in the case of every human being, whether they have achieved birth or not. We will have our response. Tune in and you'll hear all about it, ladies and gentlemen. That's it for this week. Should the Lord tarry, I will return. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Denver Bible Church, at TheologyOnline.com, at Colorado Right to Life, at American Right to Life, and as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.